You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Joe and Amber Podcast.
When that trade went down, Stephen A. Smith admitted on First Take, Joe, that he's not particularly well-versed in hockey, which I don't find to be shocking information. But I know all the blogs have now run with it, and they're all, you know, ESPN doesn't care about hockey, because I guess he represents everything with ESPN. What do you think that they would think of me messing up Ryan Callahan's name?
It was a hell of an effort from you. I don't think anyone could get upset, because you put the work in to get to know the names. You nailed the names. You probably had that sigh of relief right after you got through Panarin inside your mind, where you're like, I did it. And then your brain switched off and you biffed Callahan. Yeah. And the rest is history. But I appreciate the effort and I applaud the effort. It's not easy. I'll tell you, it goes to show the work that's put in by a lot of these broadcasters. John Anik, who's a friend of mine who calls these UFC fights, there are a lot of Dagestani fighters with very challenging names. You got to put the research in, the time, you got to talk to them, you got to study, you got to learn the dialect with it. So for those who do this for a living and knock it out of the park each and every time, kudos to the work, Evan. Kudos to you. I mean, you'll get Callahan one day. You'll get there.
I deserve, right? I deserve zero kudos. Zero. I would never be able to be a play-by-play analyst, because I think I would get nervous around those names. You know, like, the crazier the name or the harder it is to pronounce, the more outside my natural dialect it is, I would probably spend so much time on it that name I would probably nail. But then, you know, Smith-Jones would catch a pass and it would be all over.
Then you'd be like, you would nail your first hockey game, crush it. And then on the sign-off, it'd be like, and I'm Amber Watson. Good night. Wait, whoa, did I get my own name wrong?
I would just be brain fried at that point. Joe and Amber's presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today and find out if they could save you hundreds on your car insurance. A name I can pronounce is Daniel Jones, an easy one, and one that I probably will be saying for quite a few more years when I'm talking about the New York Giants, because it looks like the Giants and Daniel Jones are nearing a long-term deal. Jordan Renan, he covers the Giants for us here for ESPN's NFL Nation. He tweeted out that he's heard in recent days that there's been progress between Daniel Jones and the Giants. Getting something done by Tuesday doesn't seem unreasonable. It sounds as if, I hope you're sitting down, Joe. It sounds as if there will be a four at the front of the annual salary. I know Field Yates had retweeted that, and he said he's looking like a $40 million quarterback. Those are the numbers being thrown around right now as it pertains to Daniel Jones.
Here are the quarterbacks in the NFL who have an average annual value of $40 million or more per year in their contracts. Number one, your boy Aaron Rodgers, $50.2 million is his AAV. Russell Wilson, 48. Kyler Murray, 46. Deshaun Watson, 46. Patrick Mahomes, you may have heard of him, 45. Josh Allen, 43. And then you've got Stafford and Prescott at $40 million each. Daniel Jones would be joining that list. Now, those contracts were all signed in the past, and each and every year, the numbers are going to go up for the guys who are signing. So keep that in mind. I also caution that while it's very easy to knock Jones and the Giants for a transaction like this, saying they're overpaying, they've been around him every single day. We have not. Brian Daboll has been in that building. Brian Daboll has worked with him for one full year. Brian Daboll got a lot more out of him than the previous regime did. And I would imagine they would not be doing anything like this unless Daboll said, I can win with this kid. He's got another gear. We're just scratching the surface. And if that's the case, trust the guy. Didn't he just win coach of the year? Trust the guy. Mm-hmm. We can all sit here and bash it all we want, but there's something they see. Now, if it doesn't pan out, we'll all be right. But at the same time, there's something they clearly see. So before everyone overreacts to it, remember, it's the coach of the year who's got a lot of input on this.
I am not overreacting to this, because I think this is just where the quarterback market is. I mean, $40 million kind of makes us all inhale. But the reality is that those contracts that you just mentioned, the Patrick Mahomes of the world making only $5 million more than that, that's an old contract. What's it going to look like the next time Patrick Mahomes gets paid? It's going to look quite different. This is the trajectory of where the quarterback market is going and has gone. This is where the salary cap is going and has gone, frankly. And this is the most important position in football. And if you can run Dayball's system, shown that he can do, and you're there, they have you in hand, and you've had the opportunity to prove that, don't let that guy walk out of the building. Now, there's an additional factor when it comes to this Daniel Jones story, though, because there's also a Saquon Barkley factor, where we knew that they were going to try to retain both of those guys. They were only going to be able to franchise one of them, though. I say that it is better for them to be franchising Saquon because of the nature of his position. Because, yes, a heck of a bounce back year coming off of injury. I think that we were all surprised how much Saquon still has left in the tank, frankly. But I feel like it's less risk ultimately, even though maybe it sounds crazy. It certainly would have sounded very crazy for you and I to have had this conversation about Daniel Jones a year ago. But the reality is, I think it's safer to use the tag on Saquon to keep him in the building and work out a long-term deal with Daniel Jones.
Yeah, the older the running back gets, the more you want to go with a pay-as-you-go system rather than locking up a long-term deal with a lot of guaranteed money. People have to remember, the Giants cleared out a lot of salary cap space moving on from Kenny to Galladay, which was a terrible signing from former general manager David Gettleman. Just terrible. They're sitting right now fourth in the NFL in salary cap space with $43 million. A lot's going to change over the next few weeks, but they're in pretty good shape. So if they want to sign the quarterback and use the franchise tag on Barkley, let them. Barkley's a special talent, but do you want to commit to him over the next 4 or 5 years, given his injury history, given the trajectory of the running back position in the NFL? I mean, the teams we just saw competing in the Super Bowl, did they have elite-level running backs drafted really high? Not really. I mean, the Chiefs used the first-round pick on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but he wasn't even active for the game. They were much better with Pacheco, and they were much better with Jerick McKinnon, who was limited in that game as well. And then on the Philadelphia side, they're probably going to let Miles Sanders walk. They were more than content to roll with Kenneth Gainwell and Boston Scott, who weren't first-round picks. So it's the nature of the position. If you want to give them the franchise tag and commit to 1 year at a pretty good price, that's fine. But you don't, given the history, want to commit to him long-term and then risk yet another injury for what is a very special talent in Saquon Barkley.
So signing Daniel Jones to a long-term deal means that you can keep both of those guys in the building without having to commit long-term to Saquon Barkley. I do think that's best case scenario for the New York Giants, even if the price tag seems very uncomfortable when we're talking about a quarterback that none of us had much confidence in just a season ago. Coming up next here on Joe and Amber, tomorrow is the 30th anniversary of Jimmy Valvano's famous ESPY speech. We're going to reflect on that. Joe and Amber's on ESPN Radio. You can also listen to us on the ESPN app.
Joe and Amber, the podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So you heard it there. It is the 30th anniversary of Jim Falvano's famous Don't Give Up, Don't Ever Give Up speech that launched the V Foundation for Cancer Research. We're taking this moment to celebrate Jimmy V's incredible legacy of never giving up and the impact of the V Foundation over the last 30 years. You can join our celebration and support Jimmy V's dream of victory over cancer. Go to V.org/donate. That is V.org/donate. Here's the key, guys. 100% of your donation goes to cancer research. 100%. You cannot say that with most charities. So this is an unbelievable foundation for cancer research. Every dime you donate actually goes to cancer research, a subject that I am very passionate about. I'm sure, Joe, it's right. We all are. We're all passionate about cancer.
I think, though, it obviously hits much closer to home for you, which is why it's always great to hear you speak on this subject, because it can be so not only enlightening, but rewarding, inspiring in many ways. I'm going to shut up. I don't need any more adjectives. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, unfortunately, most all of us have been touched by cancer in some way, right? I've been touched by cancer in numerous ways, unfortunately. Today is actually the 4-year anniversary of my mother's death. My mom died from brain cancer
exactly four years ago today
when I was 8 months pregnant. That was the worst experience of my life, and I had battled cancer a year before that. So you can imagine. But losing my mother, that was worse than going through it myself. Going through it myself was also terrible. I went through cancer in my early 30s. I battled breast cancer, but I am a survivor. I've been a survivor now for 5 years. So I was able to come out on the other side. I was one of the lucky ones. A lot of people, you don't realize it's statistically, of course, very rare to get cancer under 40. But if you do, particularly with breast cancer, it can be far more aggressive because you are young and that you often don't catch it as early because you're not as tuned into the idea that you might get cancer. That's true with all types of cancers. When you're a young person, you're not necessarily thinking about those things popping up on your body. You're not necessarily as likely to go get checked. Everybody, of course, needs to get checked. But even if you haven't been touched by cancer as closely to me, and hopefully you haven't, if you're listening to this, you certainly, it's such a good cause that you know you can support, because you can certainly draw inspiration from Jimmy Valvano's words. They've been played here so many times. It's such an incredible speech that just honestly inspires life. And there's so much more research that needs to be done. It's the work of people like the Jimmy V Foundation that allowed me to survive. I mean, that's just the reality of it. The reality is that I wouldn't be here if we hadn't made huge strides in cancer research. So, and I also wouldn't probably look normal after everything I went through. And that's something that's very important to a young woman, right? So it's those sorts of things that cancer research does. Such a good cause.
Considering where you were and where you are now, I'd imagine you've been asked this quite a bit, but for those who are going through the battle that you went through, what do you tell them? What can you say to them to try to give them some more hope or some more of a positive outlook? Because I'd have to imagine it can be quite daunting when you start with the diagnosis and then you're given the rundown of what you're going to be going through in order to battle it.
Yeah, it's incredibly overwhelming. I've talked to numerous, particularly women over the years that have been diagnosed, young women, and tried to give any words of wisdom I can. And one of the things that people don't realize, because there's so much negativity around social media, and it's very easy in the world that we live in today to kind of see some of those things as a negative. When you're going through cancer, it can be a huge positive because there's so many resources and there's so many ways to connect with people going through the exact same battle as you. That ended up being so valuable to me when I was going through cancer, because I didn't know anybody else in my life going through. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends who had been diagnosed with cancer in their early 30s, you know? And so for me, finding other young women online who were going through the same thing and connecting with them and discussing with them what I can expect in their battles and what they cared about and what, you know, really was important and how do you prepare for these things that you're about to go through from the perspective of somebody who's gone through it. Those resources are there. They're available, but they're also easily available through just apps like Instagram and Twitter. It can be such a valuable resource. So there's so many people willing to help in that community. And my advice to anybody going through a battle would be get that help. There's nothing wrong with it. There's so many people who have been through it that are more than willing. They're honored to help. And that's really the goal of everybody, right, is to – everybody in the cancer community is to try to make the huge strides to make it all better for everybody who comes, unfortunately, after us. And hopefully one day we can eradicate everybody of having to deal with any of the stuff that I had to deal with or my mother had to deal with as well at the end of her life.
It is outstanding to hear that, because generally when you're hearing about those platforms and what happens on them, it has such a negative overtone. And that's not to absolve the negative overtone, but it is good to hear occasionally that there's some positive that you can find from using that, that there are people out there outside of the screaming, yelling eggs with the nine numbers to end their handle. There are the people out there that are willing to help. That's, I would not have thought that that would be the first place you would go, but that's great to hear, to know that that is in fact out there.
It's out there. It's one of the first places that it was one of the most helpful things, just connecting with other people that were going through the same fight that I was going through and had gone through the same thing. So if you are going through that, certainly our thoughts are with you. And vfoundation.org. Can you put it up for me again, James? I don't want to mess it up. But I just want to get them v.org/donate. That's where you go to donate. v.org/donate, where 100% of your donation goes to cancer research. Okay.
Credit to James, who got back that up there quite fast.
Yes, he got that up there very fast. I appreciate that. Okay, so back to sports, because there is a big one tomorrow. Speaking of college basketball, there is a big one in college basketball. The Duke Blue Devils are taking on the North Carolina Tar Heels. That is tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Coach Mike Krzyzewski is happy that he is no longer coaching in this game. He was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning. Take a listen to the five-time national champ.
I feel good. I feel good not coaching it. I've had 98 times I was in the Duke UNC game, and it was an honor to be in all of them. Not at the beginning, because Jordan Worthy and those guys were a little bit better than we were. And no, it's an honor to be in that rivalry, you know, where the focus of attention for college basketball that day or the day before and the day after is that game. A lot of people feel like North Carolina needs to win this game, a quad one game, to add to their NCAA resume. So you're going to have two very hungry teams.
Two very hungry teams. Two teams, though, not where we're used to these two teams being, Joe. Two teams that are unranked. However, North Carolina is fighting. They're on the bubble. They could make the tournament with a win here. And this Duke team is a very young, developing team.
Yeah, our very own Joe Lunardi, a.k.a. Joey Brackets, the man who lives for March. He's got North Carolina as his first four out. I believe it's the first of his first four out. This is a huge, huge game for the Tar Heels. Good news. They're laying 2.5 points. I would go ahead and lay that in this situation. You're at home. Go back to the game these two played I want to say it was about a month ago. All right? North Carolina goes on the road to Duke. They lose that game by 6 points. In a matchup where they shoot 34% from the field. That was their third worst shooting night in 30 games this season. It was a terrible performance. And what math tells us, or at least regression to the mean or the law of averages, is that you're probably not going to shoot that poorly again, and the game shifting home, and you only lost by 6 last time. So I think they're in a very favorable situation here against a Duke team that's 9-19 against the spread over the last 28 games. Neither team has been impressive the way we thought they might be to start the season, or the way we're accustomed to seeing them over the course of the season, especially North Carolina, who I believe was the preseason number one after making the finals last year. They have been nothing of the sort, but they need this win. And if I'm putting any money on it, which, you know me, maybe every now and again, I would play North Carolina in the spot. I like them. Duke has struggled on the road this year.
Is there anything you're not putting money on?
No. I actually bet Highly once, which is in your backyard, for a best bet on Daily Wager when it was the summer and it was All-Star break and we had no baseball.
That is surprising.
I lost
nobody,
it. Shocking.
Nobody. Oh, well, there you go. You're going to need to do some research there on your highlight teams. You mentioned the shooting there for Carolina. It was ugly. They have finally found that outside shot. We'll see how this one plays out tomorrow night. Coming up next, why is Will Levis throwing at the combine? You'll hear that answer. This is Joe and Amber.
Joe and Amber, the podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Joe and Amber, you can find him on social at Joe Fortenbaugh. You can find me as well at Amber W Sports. You can also always chime into the conversation. 888-SAY-ESPN. That's how you do that. We're going to get to the sound from around the world of sports that's happened over the last 24 hours or so. There's some good stuff out of the NFL Combine coming out of Indianapolis this week. However, first, Joe has to try to make you some money. You know how it works here. Let's get to it.
Pizza money alert.
Pizza, pizza.
Lousy week. We got to turn it around. We've got a couple for tonight that we'll be laying out over the next hour, and then we've got a couple for UFC 285 tomorrow, so stay tuned. Yesterday, the accounting, 1-2, down 1.2 units. Season, 31-31, plus 8.4 units. Matthew Fitzpatrick, one of our futures plays in golf, however, top 10 heading into the weekend. That's a 35-1 ticket. So tonight, Kevin Durant, under 21.5 points. Many of you will not want to play this, I understand, but look at his debut the other night. 23 points against Charlotte. He was on a minutes restriction. He should be on a minutes restriction again tonight. Now let's look at that Charlotte game. 67% from the field, his fifth best shooting night in 40 games this season. Do we see that happening again? Charlotte, fifth in the NBA in pace, which means you're going to get a lot of shots up, 22nd in defensive efficiency. A lot of those shots are going to be good looks. The Bulls are not Charlotte. They're 14th in pace. They play slower, which means fewer shots, and they're fifth in defensive efficiency. So those shots you put up are oftentimes going to be contested. Pizza money number one, Kevin Durant under 21.5 points against the Bulls.
They said it, but what do they really mean?
What are you trying to say to us?
Sound on, sound off with Joe and Amber.
So a lot of these top-tier quarterbacks coming into the NFL draft don't bother to throw at the combine. Will Levis is the exception to that rule. Well, Will Levis is going to throw at the combine tomorrow. When asked why, Levis answered with this.
Not everybody goes through the throwing portion of the combine. Why did you ultimately decide to
throw? Because I got a cannon. I'm going to show it off.
That's an amazing answer. James, yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So, Joe, what's the risk reward for someone like Will Levis throwing at the combine?
Injury. That's it, injury. And that's the risk everyone has. You could go and you could get hurt. But come on, man, you're playing football. You're playing football. What's the risk here versus your pro day and everything else? I love the guys who want to compete. I love the guys who want to play. I love the guys who want to show up at the combine. If you don't, it's not a knock. I get it. It's a business decision. But for Levis, you got a cannon for an arm? I love the confidence. Go show it off. Go put people on notice. Although the thing is, I think we, the media, and a lot of fans, we overhype this event. We think guys go to the combine and suddenly boards are restructured. Dan Campbell, head coach of the Lions, said it recently, and I think most people echo it. It's about the tape. It's about how you play against high-level competition. This is really just a get-to-know-you phase with interviews and then to see if you can run fast and keep yourself in shape.
I think the risk here is actually him not looking like he has a cannon for the arm, for his arm. That's the risk. I don't think the risk is realistically injury. Like, we say it's injury. Has a quarterback ever been injured throwing at the combine?
And these good question.
These guys throw it there. I'm trying to find it. I mean, right now I'm on a deep dive down Reddit, so you can imagine what my sources are.
Great
at the moment,
source.
Because I'm not having an easy time finding if it's ever happened. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it probably hasn't. And these guys throw at their pro days. The reality is that, yes, you're scouting these guys based on the tape, just like Joe said. You probably don't need them to throw at the combine. So the risk for Will Levis is that he goes out there and it doesn't look as good as it looked on the tape and that you're hurting your draft stock. However, I think if you're Will Levis, you know that right now it's CJ Stroud, it's Bryce Young that's supposed to be at the top of this draft. Maybe Will Levis feels like, I have a stronger arm than any of these other guys. If I go out there and I can show that to them in person, then maybe I can move up the board a couple more spots. So maybe that's what he's thinking. I don't have a problem with it. I think the whole thing about injury is a whole bunch of hogwash, frankly. I mean, it's not like you're going against defenses when you're out there throwing. Warm up properly. They're young men. They'll be fine. Speaking of quarterbacks who are going to throw at the combine, according to ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller, Anthony Richardson, who is also expected to throw tomorrow, has been wowing scouts during the interview process. Where does Richardson see his career going over the next couple of years? Here's AR.
I want to be a legend, you know. I want to be like Patrick Mahomes. I want to be like Tom Brady. I want to be one of the greats, you know. I will be one of the greats, you know, because I'm willing to work that hard and get to that point. So to answer the question, you know, I feel like I'm going to be one of the greats in the next few years.
So he, Amber, you know, he wants to be a great, he, you know, wants to be like Patrick Mahomes, who is definitely great. What a great quarterback that guy is. Oh, sorry. Anyway, so
very objective,
what do you
from you, Chiefs fan.
I'm sorry. What do you think Anthony Richardson's ceiling is as an NFL quarterback, Amber?
Well, at least he's not setting the bar high for himself. You know, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, at least he set realistic expectations for himself. No, listen, I mean, that's the kind of confidence that you should have if you're a dude coming into the league. I think that with the ceiling with him is honestly, it could be incredibly high. But as a Gators fan, it's funny, I keep seeing all these like funny memes and funny posts about, you know, the Gators fan reaction to all of this surrounding Anthony Richardson right now, because those of us that watched it game in and game out and lived it game in and game out, we're like, what? He's a top 10 pick? What are you guys doing? You know, because it's because of the completion percentage. And it was so infuriating. But it wasn't the mechanics and it wasn't the athleticism. I mean, what this guy, I heard Mina Kimes talking the other day about how he evades pressure inside the pocket. He has some of those Patrick Mahomes-like skills. And I don't think it's totally unreasonable then if you were to say, sure, the ceiling could be astronomical because the talent and the athleticism is there. The skills, as raw as they are, they're there. I don't know if they're ever going to develop in terms of the completions or the accuracy, Joe, or even the decision-making. But if it did, then I guess the sky's the limit.
I am already thoroughly exhausted from this story. And
it's
this is
really
not to knock Richardson.
What's happened here?
I am just thoroughly exhausted. Richardson is who Richardson is. There's no other way to slice it. Nothing is going to happen between now and the draft where we are going to have a change in the fundamental breakdown of Anthony Richardson. Incredible physical specimen. Developmental project who needs to learn and get better in the passing game. That's what it is. You don't need Mel Kiper to tell you that. You don't need any more breakdowns. That's the situation. And oh, by the way, he was 100-1 to go first overall, and now he's 8-1. And people think that's inside information. It's just a bad number. It's smart guys betting a bad number. That's all that is. It doesn't mean anything has changed regarding Richardson. He's not going number one overall. I'm very intrigued by the story. I hope he ends up in a good landing spot so we can see him develop, so we can see him reach his full potential. But the story's done, as far as I'm concerned. Every time his name comes up, we have the same conversation. That's it. Can we please fast forward to the draft and find out where he goes, and then fast forward again to year three when he's on the field? I would like
right.
to see that.
That's yeah, not how I mean, any of this works, Joe. That's not how any of this works.
The story is so far from done because now everyone's going to be glued to their televisions to find out where Anthony Richardson goes. It's honestly brilliant for the NFL, right? I mean, we're all because
oh
we're talking about a quarterback. He could be a top 10. He could be a second rounder. Like, we have no idea where he's going to end up going because he's so hard to evaluate. And that is going to be a fun guy to watch throughout the draft to just see exactly where the chips fall. And then you're right, wherever he goes, probably not gonna be starting right away since he's a developmental project. So then we're gonna have to wait even longer for the story to be truly finished. Panthers coach Frank Reich went from one team with issues finding a quarterback to another with the same problem. So what's Carolina's plan to find their franchise guy? Here's what he had to say about it.
Good meeting with Derek. Really have a lot of respect for him as what he's accomplished in his career, the kind of player he is, the kind of person he is. you know, just see what, is this the right fit? Is this an answer? And I think, you know, part of that is, yeah, this is a good option. You know, every option is on the table at this point. Every option, you know, moving up, moving back, signing a free agent. Every option is on the table. I mean, it has to be. You have to, you know, this is a huge decision.
So, Joe, whenever Frank Reich says every option is on the table, and you know where my head goes to, does that mean Aaron Rodgers is an option?
That's a I didn't think this question was going there. I should have realized this question was going there. They would probably love to acquire Aaron Rodgers. I don't think it's the best fit for Rodgers. Number one, if you're Green Bay, do you want to deal him in the NFC? Probably not. It's a weak division, which means they could end up winning the division with Rodgers, which suddenly means the Packers are going to have to watch that unfold in front of their eyes. If you're moving him, you got to get him to the AFC. You can't run the risk of running into that guy in the playoffs and having him either take a playoff spot from you or knock you out of the postseason. And Rodgers wants a team that's probably closer to winning. And I know that may sound crazy because the Jets, I don't know how close they are, but the Panthers still need to develop some pieces. They're on their way. They got a really underrated defense, but they still have a ways to go.
Yeah, we went through this conversation back with Favre, frankly. I mean, they're not going to deal Aaron Rodgers inside the conference. I don't believe that's going to happen. Also, I don't believe that Aaron Rodgers would want to go to the Carolina Panthers. I just don't feel like that's a good fit all the way around. But yes, of course, if every option's on the table, then Aaron Rodgers is one of those options, theoretically speaking. Like, I think the Panthers would want Aaron Rodgers. I just don't think Green Bay or Aaron Rodgers are going to play ball. But I think every team in the National Football League who has questions at quarterback would want Aaron Rodgers. We are talking about the dude. Yes, this past season wasn't so great, but we are talking about the dude who just won two back-to-back MVPs just before that. If they could afford him, they don't have to give up a ton for him because of where he is in his career and the age he is and the fact that Green Bay and him have this apparently fractured relationship and they're trying to move on. If you know all those things, any organization out there that has quarterback needs would probably be interested in Aaron Rodgers. Coming up next here,
that was an Aaron Rodgers watch.
Should have seen that.
Should have smelled that one.
Should have seen it coming. Coming up next here on Joe and Amber, a big card for the UFC. I mean, James is just so tickled. He's just tickled by his
own
work.
I love that. I love that production.
A big card for the UFC on Saturday, including the return of Jon Jones. We'll get into it. Joe and Amber's on ESPN Radio.
Joe and Amber, the podcast.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Jon Jones is now a heavyweight. Joe and Amber's on ESPN Radio. You can find him on social at Joe Fortenbaugh. You can find me as well at Amber W Sports. We are going to get into the Jon Jones fight coming up in Joe's neck of the woods in Las Vegas. But first, Joe's going to try to earn you some more money.
Pizza money alert.
Pizza, pizza.
Gonna have to filibuster here for about 5 or 6 seconds, as like usual, wasn't prepared for the segment.
And like saying you're filibustering isn't really filibustering. Like you're supposed to actually filibuster with something.
That's what I do. I filibuster by telling you I'm filibustering, and by the time you realize what's happening, boom, pizza money number two. Anthony Davis under 12 and a half rebounds in the Lakers game tonight. Now, you might think, Fortenbaugh, why would I want to bet under 12 and a half rebounds for Anthony Davis when he's averaging 13 per game this season and he's recorded 34 rebounds over his last two games? Excellent question. This is a price based on how his season has gone. It should be based on the matchup he has tonight against one Rudolph Gobert. Now, I don't know if his name is actually Rudolph, but Rudy Gobert is the kryptonite to AD's rebounding game. Averaging 12.9 rebounds per game this season, in 16 career matchups against Gobert, he's averaging just 9.5 rebounds per game. The value is there because the bookmakers have priced this as a normal Anthony Davis rebounding game, and it is anything but. Pizza money number two, Anthony Davis under 12.5 rebounds.
I can find no evidence that Rudy Gobert is a Rudolph. Just no evidence.
This show knows him as
Rudolph. Joe and Amber is presented by Progressive Insurance. Tune in to NBA Action Sunday as the Lakers host the Warriors, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern on select ESPN radio stations. John Jones is fighting Cyril Gain tomorrow night. Allegedly, that fight starts at 10. We know it'll fight that the main card will start much later than that. Nevertheless, those two will be fighting tomorrow night. John Jones added 43 pounds to his body to become a heavyweight. The longtime UFC light heavyweight champ actually did weigh more than his opponent when they had the weigh-in today. He hit the scale at 248 pounds. So mission accomplished for John Jones. And of course, the internet has gone wild, Joe, with the pictures of Jones when he was fighting at 205 and Jones now fighting at 248. And there is a noticeable difference, noticeably fluffier, I'll say, yeah. Fine. But also, he does look bigger overall. He looks like he might have put on quite a bit of muscle as well.
He looks like a lot of people when we were going through COVID. We weren't really going outside, getting a lot of work in. We started to pillow up a little bit, and people will look at Jones and be like, oh, I don't know about that body. Now, first off, don't worry about John Jones, okay? We did this on Daily Wager a little while ago. We put the pictures side by side. Johnny Jones in 2019 versus 2023. It's not fair. When you're fighting at 205, and you're probably not walking around at 205, you're cutting weight. You are right. Incredibly lean, which is what he was. Now he's at heavyweight. Shredded. He's got to put weight on. What do you want him to do? Be shredded with 40 extra pounds on? It doesn't work that way. He knows what he needs to do. The question is whether or not, A, the layoff hurt him, and B, Cyril Gane, when he starts taking punches, Jones, that is, at heavyweight, how is he going to react to that power? Because there is a noticeable step up in power against a guy like Cyril Gane, who's kind of like this new age heavyweight. Gone are the days of like the big, I don't want to say sloppy, but like big, not necessarily jacked up type of heavyweights who are plodding around the ring. Gane is a tremendous athlete. He can strike. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he's just a physical specimen. And he would have taken out Francis Ngannou if he had made a couple better decisions. Ngannou was not a wrestler. I think he had one takedown in his entire career, but he shot 5 times against Gane, and he took him down 4 times. He had incredible riding time in that fight, and that helped pave the way for the victory. Jones's last 2 fights, for some reason, he's abandoned his wrestling, which is what made him John Jones. It's what he's best at. He's more inclined to stand and trade, and if he does that in this fight, even though he still has a 3-inch reach advantage, there's going to be an issue there. Gane's weakness is his takedown defense. Jones's strength, among many things, is his wrestling. I would expect him to want to take Cyril Gane to the ground and then try to make it his fight from there. That's my prediction for the fight. I think Jones wins it. I mean, the bookmakers opened this, Amber, as pretty much a pick'em. It was pick your guy. The price was the same, but it's been nothing but Johnny Bones money coming in. He's now a -180 favorite.
So you can tell that I am a UFC expert by the fact that I was saying Gane instead of Gane.
It's okay.
Fans are freaking out because as it pertains to the wrestling portion of this, John Jones, as part of his media duties leading up to this fight, did like a 30-second wrestling with Bo Nickel. Am I saying that right? I hope I'm saying
that. No, you got that one, Bo Nickel.
There you go, Bo Nickel. That's what I thought. And he looked gassed.
Not exactly a hard one. Let's go ahead and throw that out there, too.
But he looked gassed. But people are like, well, it could be Nick Hale. It could be Nicole. Who knows?
Fair point.
So he looked gas after wrestling for like 30 seconds earlier this week. And so fans are freaking out now that he's not in wrestling shape. And like you said, that used to be a huge portion of his ability there in the octagon. He's undefeated in the octagon, right? I mean, the one time that he was disqualified in 2009, he was dominating that fight before the disqualification. So really, he's never lost in this, inside the ring. However, we are talking about a guy now who's fighting it much, much heavier. And what is that going to mean for his conditioning? His body's been through a lot, packing on 43 pounds.
If he finds a way to win this fight, I mean, to do this at 2 different weight classes is only going to cement his status as the GOAT. Many view him as the GOAT right now. If he does this at heavyweight, I don't see any reason why anyone's going to have a case for anybody else. I mean, he has been that good. But again, for as chaotic as his life can be out of the octagon, and it's been very chaotic, lots of run-ins with the law, lots of mistakes in the octagon, he's such an incredible decision maker. That's like the juxtaposition of John Jones. Terrible decisions outside the octagon, but phenomenal quick thinking inside the octagon. And Ciryl Gane has admitted in the past as well, he doesn't really train a lot in between fights, which I found staggering to admit. If that's gamesmanship, so be it. But it's a compelling fight. It's a very compelling fight because there are a lot of individuals out there who do believe Ciryl Gane is going to win this fight. So when it comes to UFC 285, not just shilling because we work for ESPN. It's on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. I'm going to be in the building. I'm going to be there for all the prelims. It is a great card. And Bo Nichols making his debut. Fellow Penn State grad. I was not a three-time national wrestling champion like he was, but, you know, it's going to be a hell of a debut.
Well, there you go, Bo Nickel. We will see how this one pans out. John Jones reportedly wanted to be 270 pounds for this fight. That was his goal.
Jeez, really?
His goal, what he had previously stated, that he was aiming to get to be 270 when he was going to fight as a heavyweight.
It's like Homer Simpson when he tried to get the 300 so he could go on disability. You remember that? And he just gets huge wearing a muumuu.
Muumuu, yeah, that was a great one.
That's an old episode.
What's funny about John Jones is, by any other standard, like, he still looks great, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
By any other standard, it's not like he's out here all fat or anything. He still looks all, like, jacked up and great and whatever. But it's because we're used to seeing him look so lean at 205 that it's kind of shocking when you compare the two. Coming up next, more Joe and Amber as we roll on here on ESPN Radio.
Joe and Amber, the podcast.